Who are you?
Raul Wybera.
Jim Arrowwood.
J.P. Harvey.
What do you want?
To talk about the show Crusade with friends and fans.
Where are you going?
All the way through Crusade and then to the novels.
Who do you serve and who do you trust?
Babylon 5 fans everywhere.
This is still the Babylon Project podcast.
The year is 2020. The place, the Babylon Project podcast.
This is Maggie Egan, your ISN news anchor, and you're listening to the Babylon Project podcast. Thanks for listening.
Hi, Maggie. She's going to be in with us tonight. Not us, but, well, you'll understand. This is, if you haven't figured it out yet, Raul Wybera, and I am joined by my very patient good friends, Jim Arrowwood and J.P. Harvey. How are y'all?
All right.
Ready to go.
Okay, and I presume our producer is lurking in the background somewhere.
He's a lurker.
There's always one.
Oh, always one, of course. So, Jim.
Yo.
What episode are we talking about tonight of Crusade?
Yeah, of Crusade, we are talking about the 10th episode of the season, The Memory of War. And you know what? I will bet a month's pay that JP has some particular details for us on this episode.
JP!
Yes?
Do you have some particular details for us on this episode?
I might. So this episode, as you said, number 10... was production episode number 2, and as JMS originally envisioned the order, it would have aired as the 3rd episode of the season and the series. Written by JMS and directed by Tony Dow, who also directed Patterns of the Soul. That was episode 5.
Leave it to Beaver, Tony Dow?
Leave it to Beaver, Tony Dow. It is. It's the same guy.
It is.
So okay. I was right. I made the bet. You guys, I'll send you my bank routing number after a while, and you can send me your paychecks.
Yeah. Who took you up on the bet?
Yeah, what was the bet?
I don't know. He was trying to get a bet. Maybe Troy took him up on it. I don't know.
No, y'all did. All y'all did.
All y'all?
All y'all.
But what was the bet? I can't remember.
The bet was a month's pay.
I think he was going to send us a month's pay if you had new information.
If I didn't remember that Tony Dow did this episode.
Right.
All right, enough. Let's get on with it.
So, The Memory of War. This is, I guess, for us now, this is the second episode that we'll have seen in the bellhop uniforms.
Yeah.
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 You know, I'll just say this now, but I kind of wish they could have swapped uniforms with episodes. It would have.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. Okay, Jim. Gosh, this tells you how tired I am. Total brain fart. Do we normally do
wake
the,
up?
We do the summary first, right? And then the, I guess, cast.
Sure.
All right. Okay, in that case, Jim, how about a summary to get us set?
All right.
Archive. Access. Initiated.
Excalibur arrives at a dead planet. Before the crew heads down, Galen arrives and tells Gideon that the Technomages have declared it a forbidden place, and that if he goes down there, there is a good chance that he and his people will not come back alive. Gideon takes a crew down to investigate further, and it isn't long before several individuals are mysteriously killed. Darina discovers a data crystal that contains a recording of an alien who explains that something was killing the planet's population, but it could not be determined what it was. Upon further investigation, Dr. Chambers discovers a nanovirus that is responsible for causing people to become homicidal. Galen discovers that the nanovirus was created by a technomage and goes to the planet to find a holographic technomage. He is responsible for becoming mercenary and reprogramming a giant artificial intelligence to create the nanovirus. Galen destroys the computer using his technomage staff, a gift from his teacher. When the computer is destroyed, the nanovirus becomes inert. Galen is upset that his staff is lost, buried under tons of rubble from the destruction of the machine. But Darina arrives on the ship with the staff she has recovered from the wreckage. Dr. Chambers uses the inert nanovirus to create an immunity to the Drock plague. Well, there it is.
And there it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this episode has a very different feel from a lot of what we've been used to. In particular, well, it still feels like an introductory episode, not something toward the end of the, you know, toward what should have been the middle of the season. But before we get to that, you know, we don't have a lot of guest cast as far as main characters, but we do have some guest cast. So who do we have?
Character files opened.
So for guest starring, we have Susie Park as Sogayu, James Parks as Duncan, who also appeared in Severed Dreams. Well, you were going to say something.
I was just trying to figure out who was Sogayu.
Sogayu was the IPX employee, the female IPX employee.
Oh, right. The female one.
Okay. And also guest starring, we had John St. Ryan as Technomage, who also appeared in A Day in the Strife.
And who wasn't a cowboy Western style type this time.
No. Here. No. He, and he didn't have a huge part either. I mean, nope. he was just kind of there. I think seemed like they needed a warm body to read the lines, and that's kind of the way it went. Under co-starring, we have Ron Campbell as Balin. He was in 5 episodes of Babylon 5 and in A Call to Arms. We have Maggie Egan returning as Jane, who is no stranger to B5 fans, and if she
is... Insert applause here.
Yes. If she is a stranger to you, then you better start watching the show.
Start from the beginning, folks. Yep.
Yes, start from the beginning. And then, finally, under co-starring, we have Dustin McDonald as Guard.
Uh-huh.
And that is your guest cast.
Is this the first time we actually see Ron Campbell's face? Because wasn't he usually a Drazi?
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head.
Initiating plot analysis.
Okay. So we get to start this episode with some more archival footage. But that's okay. It's Jane. Go ahead and let her get us up to speed.
And as the planetary quarantine enters its 4th month, mass rioting continues in India, South Africa, and parts of Central America as they struggle to deal with the total collapse of their economies, the result of lost income usually generated by trade with other worlds. Across the planet, spaceports normally crowded with travelers stand empty. Starships grounded by military order. Even orbital transports have been banned, given the government's concern that they could be used to ferry Earth citizens to waiting starships and carry the Drak virus beyond Earth. In the Vatican, Pope Bernadette II led a global day of prayer and fasting. She called for churches everywhere to unite in the scientific community's attempt to find a medical cure. Current efforts include using the Ranger fleet to search for possible leads on other planets, which are then investigated by the deep-range military research vessel Excalibur, launched shortly after the Drak War. Meanwhile, in Earthdome, Director of Xenobiological Research, Dr. Stephen Franklin, appeared today before the Senate to testify about the progress made in other research.
Captain, you said to alert you when we reached our destination. We're coming into orbit now.
Thank you, Lieutenant. I'm on my way. Nothing much good on TV tonight, anyway.
Or any other night, for that matter.
I'm going to assume that wasn't a shot at Maggie. It was the news being reported.
Yep.
Not much good on TV tonight.
Boy, did that not give you a sense of deja vu?
Yeah.
At least for the time of 2020 that we're recording this.
Yeah. You know what? The thing is, though, what I noticed about this was they did a really poor job aging Maggie.
Mm.
Did you notice they had tried to gray her hair a little bit?
Yeah, it didn't look like she was naturally gray. It looked like they put highlights or streaks or whatever you call that in.
Or they used the old talcum powder trick.
Yeah, I couldn't understand why they did that. because it hasn't been that long since the last episode we saw Maggie, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Anyway, I sure hope it wasn't Kim Ferry that...
Maybe it ain't the years, it's the miles.
Yeah.
I sure hope it wasn't Kim Ferry that did the hair job on Maggie this time, because Kim Ferry is well known in Hollywood as, I guess she has like a huge studio and does a lot of hair for a lot of different shows.
Well, we did find out something that I had asked about some time ago. It turns out the Rangers are running point on the search activities, and then the Excalibur follows up.
And that explains a question we had earlier in this series, when it seemed that the Excalibur was just kind of meandering about, hoping to crash into an answer to the plague problem. But in fact, we know that some segment or the entire Ranger fleet is actually out there scouring, and the Excalibur is either detailed to look at specific leads. Well, not, I won't say either. They're detailed to go pursue certain select leads, and when they're not doing that, they're probably doing some of their own exploration, which might be those episodes where you think, what are they doing? This looks like a total waste of time. Well, if they're waiting between specific taskings coming from the Ranger fleet, they're not going to sit still. So they're wandering, they're exploring, they're doing whatever you want to call it. But we wouldn't know that given the order that these things aired.
Mm-hmm.
Nope. I was going to say, you know, if we had seen this third episode, things would be making a whole lot more sense.
Yeah.
So, yep. Okay, when they released the probes, you know, launched the probes, were you expecting to see one or two probes, you know, go out? Or did you expect, or did having a few hundred balls blast out down to the planet make you kind of scratch your head, like, what?
Yeah. So when I think of a probe, I think of, maybe a basketball size thing dropped out of the ship. But no, I don't think of hundreds of small ping pong ball size things falling out, kind of like Captain Kangaroo, you know.
Yeah. Oh gosh, I haven't thought about that show in years.
Oh
yeah, Mr. Moose.
And they still looked big. It just looked like a lot,
right?
You know, because the ship is behind them.
Until we get an anomalous reading.
Yeah, and then on the surface, you discover that they are like ping pong balls.
Well, Galen holds what the anomalous... You know, when you think anomalous reading, you think, okay, the crap's going to start already. you know, usually that's some sort of warning of something nasty. In this case, the anomalous reading is Galen holding up that little ping pong sized ball in his hand and being grumpy.
Get the others up here. Tell
them. Just a moment. We're getting some anomalous readings from one of the probes.
Let me see.
I want you to know that this thing just made a very large dent in my ship. Did you ever think about looking outside before you start throwing things overboard?
Maybe next time you let us know when you're coming. So what brings you here this time?
An attempt, in all probability foolish and useless, to prevent you from going down to that planet.
Galen, my people have been looking for this place since we left Earth. Now that we're here, what could you possibly say that would change that?
Well, how about, if you go down there, the odds are that none of you will return alive. Clear me for docking. Put away the breakables, turn on the landing lights. I'm coming in.
So Galen doesn't want them to go there. And I have to wonder, does that mean the Excalibur is covered by Geico?
No, it means they're going to go there regardless. They are not going to heed the warning. They're going to go there.
But they should at least pull the dent first.
Consider how the warning was delivered.
Yeah.
Hey, you guys just dented my ship with this, and you should look around before you throw things overboard. By the way, if you go to the planet, you're all going to die. Now, put away the breakables, and it's like, he's not being serious.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out he is, but
JP,
yes.
In the very next scene, we get Galen's dramatic entry. And
we do.
Serious Galen.
The heck does this guy walk through the ship without scaring the hell out of everybody? He is the most, I mean, good night nurse. This guy is, he's got shoulders that are a mile wide. You know, he's got to turn sideways to walk through doors. And you want to talk about intimidating? Of course, there's nobody getting in his way.
The capes and the staff. Oh, here's an even better question. With the way he seems to get around, why does he even have to walk there to begin with?
Well, because it's more dramatic that way.
Oh, yeah. Right. I said dramatic entry.
Yes.
Yeah. But he makes his way to their meeting. Max is noting that from everything that they've seen, the place is pretty much intact. It's just no people. And Chambers concurs and sounds like everyone's, yay, team, this is a good place to look for something.
Yeah, of course, nobody listens to Galen. Don't go there.
Yep.
But no, well, it's a great place. Let's take a shore leave here.
Actually, it almost sounds like that. Let's go ahead and hear what Galen has to say about this place, though. We get an idea of why he's worried.
And it could be a virus.
Naturally, I defer to Dr. Chambers' analysis, but based on the condition of the cities, yes, I'd say it's possible.
I agree. It's a perfect paradigm for our situation.
Oh, a paradigm. How wonderful. I'm sure the race that died beneath us would love to know that their fate had been reduced to a paradigm. Sorry, do go on.
Ever since we started this mission, the Rangers have been investigating stories about a highly advanced world whose population was wiped out during a war about 100 years ago using non-destructive technology. No missiles, no radiation, no obvious poisons. To all intents and purposes, it sounds like the Drak virus.
If it's the same virus, or even if it's close to it, we can make a lot of progress toward curing this thing by looking at the steps another world took in trying to deal with a similar problem.
Best of all, the cities are still intact. The place could be filled with unknown alien technology. First, I thought it was a legend like the Flying Dutchman. This is real, and it's here. All we have to do is go down there, get inside those places, and take it.
As our resident lockpick, that's where you come in.
Or check out. If you're smart.
You keep saying that, but you still haven't explained why.
Well, there are good planets and there are bad planets. There are healthy planets and unhealthy planets. There are safe planets and dangerous planets. This place is known to every technomage as a bad place, a diseased, dangerous place.
You talk like that planet is alive.
Everything is alive in its way. Have you ever been in an empty house and felt an oppressiveness, a shadow on the soul? Now multiply that by a billion times, and that is what is fairly radiating from this planet.
So now it's haunted?
And that's one word for it. Or perhaps it's simply the understandable result of several billion people being murdered by something they could not understand or stop. For 100 years, none of my order has come near this place. The last one who tried died.
I appreciate the warning, Galen. But we're still going down there.
And you will go alone. At least this way you will have one surviving pallbearer.
Mr. Eilerson, this is a breach in protocol, according to the company. If the head of...
So...
Galen tells him and they ignore him. We're going anyway.
Yeah, and he has his Obi-Wan moment. A billion voices crying out. Seriously, though, you know, if a technomage is warning you away that seriously, you might want to listen.
Yeah. Well, you know what? What he said, you know, Max says, well, you almost sound like this planet's alive. Well, of course it's alive. It's a system that is a living system that works within itself. And you would think Max would know this as a scientist himself.
Yeah, a living system, but I think he was thinking more of the way of organic life, or at least intelligent organic life. And, you know, in truth, I was almost thinking that this was a setup for sort of a viral gestalt, you know, like the virus being almost a consciousness.
Mm. Well, we might get an idea how that works.
I guess in a way, yeah, in a way that might have been partly right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and we learn. I like what you caught at the very end of that clip too. So Max is not the only IPX person. We also learned that he is a good dancer and he's not expendable.
Well, we already know he's a good dancer. We've seen him dancing.
Yeah, but if we saw this in the order.
Oh, well, you know, we're watching this in the order that it aired in. So
True. We
should probably talk about it in that context, which, okay, we already know that Max is a really good dancer. But yeah, there's IPX people along with Max on board the Excalibur, which we have not seen here
not
before.
Yet. Right.
So,
So it sounds like he's got a full team with him.
Yeah. And Max says he's not expendable. I just wonder how many people would actually disagree with that.
I like the way he pulled the rest of the team down to make sure they would come and look for him if something happened. I mean, that does not exactly sound like a definition of expendable.
Yeah.
Anyway, he might not be taking this. I don't know. I was about to say he's not taking it seriously, but if he wasn't taking it the threat seriously, he wouldn't be making the other two key archaeologists come down with him.
Yeah.
And we know Gideon is certainly taking Galen's warning seriously. The warning.
Not.
Well, huh?
Not.
No, he's
not. We're going anyway.
Yeah, we're going anyway, but he's still charging up his PPG and he's turning over his logs to Matheson. And, you know, just in case something happens, and even makes the comment of, you know, if a technomage is that worried, you better listen. Except, well, gee, he doesn't.
Well, he said, I'd be a fool not to, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so what's he doing?
Galen says, don't go. He takes Galen's advice and says, I'll prepare to die. I'm going.
Right.
I know I'm going to die, but I'm going anyway.
He's taking him seriously, but differently than Galen wants him to.
Yeah.
I mean, who listens to techno mages with dented ships anyway?
Yeah.
Well,
have you seen his car? Ugh.
More important, have you heard his playlist? We will at the end. But, you know, Galen's still not giving up, though. He's there trying to get, without the dramatic walk, he's trying to convince Gideon again. Don't go. Jim, go ahead and play that one.
I was just defending your honor.
Must be a terrible responsibility.
Well, I've gotten used to it.
Has it ever occurred to you, Matthew, that in all our travels together, we have found no shortage of dead worlds? Dead planets, dead moons, dead colonies, dead cities.
If you get near a point.
Have you ever wondered why there are so many dead worlds out there? Let me tell you why. It's because despite the best advice of people who know what they are talking about, other people insist on doing the most massively stupid things. This is one of them. Take my advice. Don't go down there.
What's down there, Galen?
I don't know exactly.
Is that why you're so spooked over this? The unknown?
My order takes pride on knowing all that can be known, and most of all the rest. So a thing like this is disturbing, yes. But it's more than that. Look, Matthew, to those of us in my order, another technomage is the only family we have. And after I was asked to leave the order as a penalty for having too much contact with the outside, I came to rely on you. And on the others, and on this place. Perhaps more than I should have. I would hate to have to start all over again.
Then why don't you come with us? We could use you.
Because I would hate to die even more than I would hate starting over. Matthew, be careful. The legend has it that whatever is down there cannot be seen. It cannot be heard. It cannot be killed. The only technomage to land there sent back one last message. Genius loci. It's Latin, it means...
The spirit of the place. Are you saying it's some kind of ghost or a... Guess I'll find out soon enough.
So here was kind of a reveal for me that Galen is not there just to watch out for Gideon, but he likes everybody. He feels like he's part of the ship.
Yep.
On the occasions that he drops by.
Bit of a Augie moment, but yeah, it's sort of, okay, he's got his new family.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was... It's not a great reveal, but it's a cool little nugget that comes out in that dialogue that we know that Galen is afraid because he doesn't know what's down there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as that dialogue unfolded, it was neat. It says, you know, we have all these dead planets and dead cities and all these dead things because people don't listen to people who know. Implying he's a person that knows. And then Gideon says... Well, what do you know? And he then says, I don't actually know what's going on down there. We're used to knowing all of these things in our order, but we don't know what's happening there. So now you go, aha, that's why he's so afraid of this, is it's an unknowable and deadly problem.
Mm-hmm.
If the guys that know things don't know, then that's got to be terrifying.
Yeah, because they know everything there is to know and most of what there isn't.
As a technomage, Galen is a scientist. So, you know, he's not afraid of the unknown because that's what scientists go after. But knowing that there's something down there on the planet and that there is no way to know why it is so menacing or where it came from or something like that is kind of what's scaring him. And he just knows there are lots of dead people down there and he doesn't want to see a whole lot more dead people.
Especially his family.
Yeah.
Right.
And the other little nugget about genus loci is that in some contexts that is a, it talks about a protective spirit, not just the spirit of the places we might usually think of it. And when I heard that phrase watching this, I wrote that down. I wrote protective spirit, and it turns out that might be an important component as we get toward the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but according to Galen, it would be a malevolent protective spirit.
Yep.
So that makes it even scarier.
Yeah.
But all the warnings applied, administered, or delivered, and it's time to go to the
planet. They fly down to the planet. And you notice our flyboy is not around yet.
Yeah.
The one that they introduced. Apparently that was the suit said you shall, and he was added rather than something that was just started from the front.
Yeah. So that was Warzone, right? Warzone was the Azared premiere.
Yep.
And that was the 8th episode in production order. And I'm looking real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing where that fell. It wasn't even in the first 10 episodes as JMS intended. So it makes sense why we're not seeing him. And in fact, if we had seen this in the order that he had intended to air it, JMS had intended to air it, we would not have even been introduced to that guy until somewhere after the 10th episode.
Yeah.
Well, if Raul's right, we would have never seen him at all.
It's kind of what I was wondering. It's like if JMS had his way, would we have even had that first episode?
Right.
Because it almost sounds like it was they were required to throw together a new introductory episode because they wanted the suits wanted something more, I guess, traditional.
Mm-hmm. Well, they wanted a good looking guy to appeal to the women.
Right.
Clutch Cargo or whatever his name is. And
yeah.
When Sci-Fi re-aired the series, they aired Warzone as the 12th episode.
Ah.
So, you know, it would have, I guess, made more sense, even though it was still a, you know, suit interference with the storyline. But, you know, you wouldn't have seen Warzone until you were 12 episodes into the show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, on the planet, is it just me, or does every sci-fi show where we end up landing on a planet looks like a empty set with styrofoam rocks? Unless they're going out to Vasquez Rocks in Southern California.
Yeah, they couldn't afford to go out to Vasquez Rock, so they had to make up their own.
Yeah, this hasn't changed since Star Trek the original series. At least in this case, there's more actual plants, but
it's greener.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. More green instead of browns.
Right.
And they find a bunch of these probes that they sent down that just kind of crumble to dust in their hand.
Yeah, apparently they self-destruct.
I'm wondering if they were doing this at, you know, it's like, okay, supposedly, you know, they've already questioned whether there's some virus or something down there, so they've got you thinking in that respect.
Yeah, the nanovirus.
Yeah, well, they haven't determined for sure that's what killed everyone yet, but they bring up these probes. It's almost like, are the probes... And then it crumbling to powder, is that a misdirection to make you think one way and then, aha, here we're going off in another? Or what?
Or is it pointing to a particular direction? It, you know, and the point,
I don't know,
the point of that, it doesn't really go anywhere though, does it? I mean, the guy crushes one under his boot, the other guy, the IPX guy, picks one up and you know, it turns to dust in his hand, and nobody really says anything about it after that.
But they actually burn enough time to make a point out of it.
We just move on.
Yeah.
And the only thing happens with the probes is a little bit later, Galen links into a few of them. I mean, you could assume, I guess the presumption of what really happened was just the reentry burnt a bunch of them up, but.
Oh, see, and that's kind of what I thought at first.
But it's like, why go to so much effort? What, especially as valuable as screen time is, to fill it with that kind of gap. Anyway, they're setting up camp. Max gets his own little private place. And just a question. Is it me, or is Gideon a little bit more of a cocky smartass at this point than he was in some of our initial episodes?
Yeah, he might be.
He's got a little more. He's got a lot more tood, as my son would put it these days.
Yeah, I'd even say more snark, really.
Mm-hmm. And then there's what seems to be the running question when they get to a new place: where's Dorina? Well, why do they always ask that when apparently her role is to go and do some initial exploration?
Tunnel rat, lockpicker. Mm-hmm. They've got all the little names for her.
Yeah. Except in this case, it's exactly the opposite of Tunnel Rat, because she's, well, taking in a nice view from a few hundred stories.
Yeah, yeah. And she's not too bad of a view either.
Hey, have you noticed that her wardrobe has a lot more variation in these bellhop uniform episodes?
Yeah, somewhat.
She has a lot more baggy, flouncy tops, and then she goes to the leathers when she's working.
Yeah. She's just sitting up there on the ledge, just looking around, and decides to do a little exploring.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And for a thief, I'm sorry, flip an unknown switch. Not that smart. Walk across unknown light beam. Even more not that smart. Grabbing mysterious data crystal. Okay, we're really pushing the not smart thing to the max here, and then dash back across the dying light beam. Okay.
To me, it just all seemed all just quite contrived.
Quite contrived, or she needs to go back to thief school.
Well, she did a good job of thieving. It was the circumstances around the thieving that were pretty silly.
Yeah.
You know, oh, I'm sitting here enjoying the view. Now, oh, look, a switch. I'm going to pull the switch. Wow, a light bridge. We're going to go across and see what's over there. There's no seams in this wall, but we're going to find one anyway. And a panel opens, and it's like, grab this blue thing. And it's like, there's some kind of countdown going on. Uh-oh, I better get back and just, you know, and then dive just before the
right
bridge goes out from under her. I keep wanting to call it a Bifrost.
Been watching or reading too much Thor, huh?
Never too much.
I wonder how much that was stretching the episode a little bit, too, because they could have had her get up and start to make her way along the ledge, narrow ledge that she was perched on, reach around the column that she reaches around and finds a switch, but knocks a cover off of a panel. Mm-hmm. Remember, this place has been abandoned or dead for a while. Look in there and wonder what that is. Pull out a data crystal and think, I better pocket that and take it back. But they did nothing but extend the time that it took to put that crystal in her hand by having the whole light bridge scene and all. So, you know, I felt like there was a guy off stage doing the stretch gesture, right? Stretch it out, stretch it out.
You know, yeah. Worst case scenario, she could have said, hey, guys, I need a lift in order to get back down.
Yeah, the guy wanting things stretched out, that would have been Tony Dow himself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But even more lacking than the consistency, you know, a real rationale for how this came about was Max's lack of gratitude. I thought that was a good segue.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't know what she's been through. You know, mm-hmm. he just knows that all she's come back with is a data crystal. And yeah, I don't know.
Go ahead and play it.
Is that all you were able to bring back? Just the one data crystal?
Well, knowing how you work, I figure it'd take you at least a week to decode that one, so there really wasn't any rush.
I've decided to redefine our relationship. You pretend you can't speak, I'll pretend I can't hear. We'll get along famously. Interesting. Perhaps tomorrow you can show me where you found this.
I'd love to.
You're sure it's a data crystal?
Positive. It's of alien design and construction, but all data crystals share certain fundamental technologies. Shouldn't take me too long to decode it. I'll run the translation program, and we'll see what it has to say for itself.
She would just love to show Max where she got that data crystal.
And that's why we had the switch. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and at this point in the episode, I'm starting to get the feeling that this is going to be one of those they did it to themselves stories.
Oh, well, of course.
Not something that was done to them, but yeah.
It's either going to be they have killed themselves off, or the shadows are responsible.
Yep, and at this point, it's kind of, okay, this isn't going to be the shadows, I'm starting to think. Especially after we get the red boots.
Yeah, it's going to be the people of the planet itself that kills them, but it's because of another influence in mm-hmm. this case.
Well, it doesn't leave us wondering for very long, because we've got, instead of red shirt, we've got a red boot. And we've got attack graffiti and a sudden cut to apparently 3 hours after she gave Max the crystal, we get a cut to, well, the explanation.
The death of our people. Got it.
The war was over.
A week, she said, 3 hours flat.
The gods did not favor us, and so they sent the death that has no name, the death that has no face and makes no sound. It walks among us, unseen. It is the death that glides out of the darkness and cannot be stopped. Already we have lost millions. By this time tomorrow, we will all be dead. And we do not know why. We do not understand. We do not understand.
I was just talking to him. And I turned. There was a shape. You know, as if something attacked her out of the shadows. She screamed.
She's dead.
The death that glides out of the darkness.
She's dead, Jim.
Okay.
Exactly.
No, you're Jim.
Oh.
Throat cut, pool of blood. Yeah. Think she's dead? This isn't a grump at this show in particular. This is a grump at pretty much all of these television shows. You can have someone with three bullet holes in their head, or their chest exploded and most of their internal organs scattered across the room, and someone's going to come in and state the obvious. I think she's dead.
That's how they did it back in the late 90s.
and the 80s and the 70s, and it's apparently the 50s.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if they still did it in the 21st century.
You got to admit, though, the scream was spectacular.
Yes. And well-timed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, yeah, well-timed, because as the guy on the screen is explaining the story and what is going on, this is taking place right outside the room.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's more important than stating the obvious, that the person was dead. But yeah, it comes out of the darkness. We can't tell what it is. We don't know what's going on. We don't understand it. And the IPX guy says, I don't know what it was. It was a big shape, and it just kind of came up and just killed her and then went away. Whatever it was, it killed those people off, is still there. Did you also happen to notice that this new alien on the screen looked more like Lorianne than the last guy that looked like Lorianne?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. You've kind of got us sensitized to that now, Jim.
I think the Lorianne may have had a lot of ladies and, you know, a lady in every port or whatever.
Or at least every planet.
Yes. Yeah.
Apparently.
Now, if I could ask, does anyone besides me think it might be a little premature to send these bodies back up to the ship? Rather than do an autopsy or try to do some sort of analysis there?
With the unknown nature, I would say it'd probably be wise to at least do some kind of a scan on the surface of the planet before bringing the bodies back to the ship.
Yeah, what else are they sending up to the ship?
Yeah, at this point, we don't know. We still don't really know about the nanobots yet.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just, and plus, I don't know, if you consider the way that they died, it seemed like they were killing each other and one person strangled another and things like that. There didn't seem to be any other underlying circumstances other than maybe just a fit of some kind of spontaneous insanity going on.
Yep. And yeah. And apparently there's lots of ways to die, because no one died the same way. Except we don't necessarily know it's them killing each other yet.
Did you catch the goof in the script right here?
Huh?
When they list the ways to die, and I think the question's even asked if any of them were the same or if some other all different. And, you know, one had head trauma, one was bludgeoned, one had a throat cut, and the other were still determined, whatever. But when they talk about the throat being cut, the doc says one had his throat cut, his. But that was a girl who had her throat cut. So I don't know if that was just a goof in the writing or what was up with that. But it was like, well, no, then you've had two throats cut, or you meant to say her.
Maybe the original script was him, but they ended up casting a girl for the part?
Yeah, maybe so. So it was just...
Mm. Who knows?
In other words, it's your classic answer, JP. The script said so.
Thank you, Tony Dow. We'll blame him.
Okay.
Gee, Beef.
So we discover something. Galen was one of the original glass holes.
Say what, Willis?
Google Glass. Anyone remember that spectacular flop from what? I don't know, 10 years ago.
My brain.
He locks onto the probes, and his eyes go all Google Glass on us, which is actually a cooler effect there.
Okay, now I get it. Wouldn't it be cool to have that capability though?
VR.
Yeah.
Yep. And he makes an interesting discovery, runs down to tell Dr. Chambers what he's discovered, only to discover she's already discovered what he discovered. Did that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Oh, good. Okay, they both found an artificial virus.
Oh, okay.
And the virus is, now they figure out, the virus is reprogramming the people to kill themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And Galen has her stop on the micrograph of the virus, because he sees something he recognizes, a technomage glyph.
Yep.
Ah.
And he gets mad.
He is totally honked off, as the B5 universe likes to put it. And apparently he knows a little bit about this kind of technology, because he points out they've only got 4 hours left, at least the people on the planet. And he is going down to try and stop it with a staff.
Now he understands.
Mm-hmm.
And now the unknown, which is still an unknown, at least it's an understandable unknown and bears investigation. And now Galen says, well, that's it. I'm going down now. Going to kick some butt.
Yep. And apparently he's not too worried, but he's worried about everyone else. And I think we have his explanation here.
So that's where you're hiding.
Galen! Dr. Chambers told me what she found. What was that about Nightfall?
A nanovirus is too small to think on its own. It requires a control center, broadcasting instructions. When the sun goes down, the solar interference diminishes. The nanovirus will be activated. The killing will begin.
What about you?
Protected.
Then you can help restrain the others.
No, I must go my own way. If the solar rays are interfering with transmissions, those transmissions must be coming from somewhere. Somewhere safe, sealed, away from solar interference. Where would you look, Matthew? Deal with this alone. And you forget, you are infected too. Goodbye, Matthew.
So Galen tells Gideon, go back, take care of the others. He has to do this alone.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd think Gideon might have learned something about listening to a technomage when you have one, but no. He's going to isolate everyone, tell them hope the door holds, and then follow Galen.
Yeah, but he's heavily armed when he does it.
Right. When you've got a virus in you that's going to rewrite you and make you go on a killing spree, that's exactly what you want. Almost look like Sega cartridge magazines, too.
And he has a warm heart, because this is the Galen who just said, you're my family.
Right.
So now Gideon's like, nope.
I'm going to follow a friend into hell.
Yeah, I'll follow you into hell. And
Again, we talk about the order that the things aired in. We know that Galen saved Gideon. So Gideon, of course, is going to back up his friend.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And fortunately, Galen's mustache-twisting holographic projection is so busy monologuing that Gideon actually has a reasonable chance of catching up.
Yes.
And, of course, if you've got a villain spending time doing a monologue, doing an extended exposition, we've got to play it. I mean, it's what makes this all make sense.
I was asleep for a long time. I thought my work was finished. Then the others came and I awoke. I stretched forth my fingers and I touched them in all the secret places where thought lives.
You made them murder each other.
Murder? A word. Nothing more.
Why? Our order is sworn not to use our skills for destruction.
Our order says many things. Does a few of them. Believes in fewer still. The other side in this war offered me money, power, authority. We all have a price. My creator, whose shadow I am, had his. You have yours. He created me, sent me here to coordinate the nanovirus he designed for the task. It was remarkably effective. An entire world dead in less than 3 days. While the secret of their construction died with him, his voice, his instructions, his creation, I live on. In these 100 years, I have been dormant, but the nanovirus has not. They were programmed to keep building more of themselves over and over from whatever was around. They were also programmed to protect me and enhance me. I am more than I was when I arrived. I will not go back to what I was, and I will not go back to sleep. As long as the killing continues, I continue. More outsiders will follow these, and others will follow them. It will be glorious.
Guy sounds more like a Klingon than a Technomage.
Yeah, it's like, why is he killing? Because it's fun.
Because he can.
Mm-hmm. He hasn't got anything better to do.
And he's acting like a protector. As wrong as it is, so it goes back to the genus loci.
Mm-hmm.
Whether he's actually protecting or not, he's taken on that role somehow. And the whole world died in 3 days. That's powerful.
Yep.
And mm-hmm. the virus protects this AI.
Yep. Mm. We get a real quick flashback just to let us know that, and you could have probably figured it out yourself, that the doors aren't holding. And then we're back to the AI, which apparently is a very large installation, which is bad. And that somehow Jirina managed to get there before him, which apparently is also rather bad because she sort of misses with her knife and sticks him nicely into the shoulder.
Uh-huh. Did you notice the blade broke off?
I didn't notice that.
No, I did not notice
yeah,
that.
Yeah, when he pulled that knife out, all he had was a handle in his hand.
Ow.
And if you listen very, very closely, when he pulls that knife, you can hear something go snap. So I think Galen accidentally broke the blade off. And but they went with it anyway. They didn't reshoot it. They just kept on moving.
Well, of course, in my first aid training, you know, we're taught if you have a knife stuck in you or something like that, or if you this from scouts, if you accidentally, you know, if you have an arrow injury, you don't take it out.
No, you bandage it in place.
You bandage it in place. So.
Mm-hmm. You can do more damage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can do more damage pulling it out than it is going in. So, but at any rate.
Mm-hmm. But at any rate, we had, as you say, we have poor Galen now has Jirina in front of him and Gideon with a rifle behind him. So, okay.
Who is Gideon threatening?
The bridge.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if he was getting ready to shoot Galen or if he was getting ready to shoot Darina.
Yep.
Or what was going on there?
Well, that was I was being snarky myself there for a minute. That was part of the suspense there is, has Gideon been rewritten as well? Or is he that willing? And of course, this early in, if it had aired at the correct time, this early in the series, we're going to be wondering is, with the kind of snark and attitude that Gideon has already, is he going to be willing to shoot Jirina in a case like this? But
yeah,
turns out he's yelling for Galen to do, get out of the way, he's shooting out the bridge as Jirina comes charging.
Mm-hmm. The timing seemed a little off on the scene, though, didn't it?
I don't know. For the maneuver?
Yeah. The whole thing just kind of felt awkward to me.
By the timing, it's like at one point it seemed a little dragged, then it seemed a little rushed. You know,
Well,
is what you're trying to say the pacing was off?
Yeah. See, Gideon shot, the bridge went down, and Darina looked like, oh, I'm supposed to run across this, right? And then she did.
Right.
It just seemed like the sequence of events didn't quite match up.
I see where you're at, and in this particular case, I'm willing to give them a bit of a pass on it. Just if for no other reason, this is a little more of an interesting episode than some of the ones we've seen earlier. Though I will say their final solution, what seemed, in a way, at the time, it seemed okay. That was too easy. Basically, throw the staff, and it's more or less like sticking a screwdriver in the fuse box.
Or shooting torpedoes down the vent in the Death Star.
Yeah.
Well, in that case, the torpedoes had to somehow make a 90-degree turn while you flew along this very long trench, in spite of the fact that the opening for the torpedo was directly above and open into space.
Yeah, it's Star Wars.
Yeah,
it's a fantasy.
Star Wars pot, but this isn't the Star Wars podcast.
No.
But we get a little more explanation a little bit afterwards, and the whole bit with the staff actually was a little more significant than what it kind of seemed. It was sort of a Gandalf level sacrifice that he was making there.
So have we seen that staff before?
I don't recall seeing it before.
Don't.
Me either. And so here it is again. Another problem with the airing order is that this staff is apparently quite important to Galen, and it was a big, huge sacrifice for him to use it the way he used it.
Right.
But we never see it again, at least not in the first 13 episodes of what would have been a 26-episode season.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember. If we did see it, he really wasn't doing anything with it. It was more of just an accessory that really, in that case, it really didn't stick out. Oh!
Yeah.
Did anyone pay attention to the explosion?
I didn't notice anything unusual in it.
Okay, what about it?
The face and the flame.
No, I didn't catch that.
Okay, go back and watch through the boom, which is kind of answered.
Do I have to?
Yeah, in this case, yes, you do. Because our mustache-twirling villain's face is in the flame.
I that went completely past me. I've watched this episode 4 times now, and I never caught it once. That's a good catch.
It is an absolutely cool effect. Really, really neat effect. I didn't see it the first time I watched. On my rewatch, I was like, "Oh, now that's cool."
So you could see the young Sean Connery techno mage in the blast.
Absolutely.
Good one.
Absolutely.
Well, let's move along.
Moving along. Back on the ship, Dr. Chambers is patching up Galen. And I suspect we would have learned more about this later, but not only do we learn about the importance of the staff, we also notice he's had a few modifications here and there.
Yeah, he's got some implants.
Yep.
Or something.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and run through his explanation on the staff. Because I'm sure there was going to be more done with that.
This would be a lot easier if you just take the rest of your cloak off. I promise I won't see anything I haven't seen before.
You don't know that.
Come on, just a little. Just take it down.
As I said. How's our patient?
Fine.
We're almost ready to leave. Maybe you'll stay on for a while until you're healed. Sorry, can't. What's wrong?
Nothing. My staff was the only thing I took with me when I left the rest of my order. It was a control mechanism, part of me. The only one of its kind. It was a gift from the one who taught me. And now it's gone.
You had no choice. There was no other way.
Why not?
Only one technomage can undo the damage done by another. Energy responds to energy. Sympathetic magic. The staff was the one weapon at my disposal which could have dealt with it. Both are creations of technomancy. Both are control centers. And now, both are gone.
Can we have someone look for it?
We sent down a search team, but the way is blocked by millions of tons of dirt and rocks. A few breaks here and there, but too small for anyone to get through. I'm sorry. I know what it meant to you.
So a gift, an important gift.
Yep.
Yeah, and if I recall, his mentor was Elric, right?
Correct. So this was a staff created by Elric.
Given to him by Michael and Sarah, none other than. Holy moly. Yeah, that'd be quite a sacrifice.
Yeah. And it was a key, apparently it was a key to a lot of his power as well.
Yeah, it was a control device, as he said.
You wonder how much has he been diminished, or is it something he can even replace?
Well, the way he delivers those lines explains it. He sounds like he's in shock. You know, you could almost think he doesn't care. Well, I'm just delivering these lines. But it sounds like he's in shock. He can't.
Yes.
He knows it's gone and he can't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, this guy is an awesome actor.
Yeah.
Yeah. I absolutely love his acting in the role. And we get a very sweet awe moment here. And this goes along with what you just said about how good of an actor he is, because there was one last shuttle and Gideon's rather surprised because he thought everyone was on, and we find out what that one last shuttle is. Darina in desperate need of a bath because she is covered in dirt and mud from head to toe. But she has his staff.
And not only that, she shows her acting chops in this scene and doesn't say a single syllable. I mean, her eyes speak volumes.
There was a whole conversation between those two characters without a single word spoken, and it was incredibly well done.
I agree.
I would put this as one of the top scenes of the series at this point.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it was brilliant. Well done, Tony Dow.
I understand why they hired the actress to play Darina seeing this. And it also makes me wonder how much some of the some of the complaints or weaknesses we've talked about in the character were due to what they were forced to do later in the script. Remember, these episodes were what was written first. This is what Joe Straczynski intended for the character compared to the first, not 8 or 9 episodes where he was being more told how to write the characters.
Imagine the growth these two would have experienced with each other, realizing that Galen is willing to teach Darina the craft when she learns the right reason to know the stuff, and to watch her grow out of that bitter, hateful person that she is for what happened to her race, and grow above that and quite possibly become a very, very powerful technomage in her own right.
Yep. Sort of a rebirth of the order, even.
Yeah, very well could be.
Yeah. This scene made it really clear that neither the character or the actress was intended just to be eye candy like it was written in the initial episodes that we saw.
Mm-hmm.
There was a real depth there that, seeing it, I get really annoyed now, as we've been talking about, that we didn't get to see developed.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, Chambers,
mm-hmm.
she comes up with an idea to mix the nanovirus with Teflon. And
yeah.
I kind of did a double take there.
Liquid Teflon.
Yeah, but with mixing it with Teflon. Now, I thought, I could be wrong, but I thought back at that time, Teflon was a brand name, trademark brand name, because the DuPont company is the ones that invented Teflon.
Well.
Now, as I said, I could be wrong.
Is a question of, at that point, had it gone to a stage of it having gone into the general usage?
I don't know. It very well,
you know,
could
sort
have.
Sort of like Xerox.
See, I tried to look it up, and it didn't say anything about Teflon being a registered trademark. It did mention how DuPont, a scientist at DuPont, accidentally discovered it and its properties. But, you know, I kind of want to say what, but, you know, I guess not. Moving right along.
Yep. But as you said, she's got a vaccine of a sort, a temporary vaccine that's good for 48 hours.
We've seen this before, right?
Yeah. They used it much earlier in the series.
Now, and it's all brand new now.
The effect of things being aired out of order. But we find out that, you know, okay, once you've used it, you can't use it for a while, or there's some really nasty side effects.
Well, yeah, eggs just slide right down into your lungs and everything, and they just...
Yep. You know, and I just realized something else. I think I figured out exactly how this nanovirus made everyone homicidal.
Raul, tell us how this nanovirus made everybody homicidal.
It wasn't just that it rewrote the brain. It's that it destroyed every single roll of toilet paper on the planet.
Okay, stop. Moving right along. Moving right along.
Okay, yeah. Back to the box. We're back to the which apparently is called an apocalypse box.
Right. It's that little glowing box that Gideon won in that poker game.
Was kind of ignored for the first bunch of episodes, and now it suddenly seems to become very important, is telling Gideon to not trust Galen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would love to have seen where that was going, because the box clearly was going to be a much bigger part of the original story.
Or it was going to get jettisoned out of an airlock.
Or at least for the season, it would have been a major part.
Yeah, which may have happened anyway.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, Galen flies off into the, well, into the unknown void, the hyperspace unknown void.
The hyperspace sunset.
Yeah, listening to his tunes.
His playlist.
Apparently he's got an Alexa on his ship, and his musical taste could use some refinement.
I didn't think it was too bad.
No, don't insult the man's music.
I never got too big into techno. Give me some classic 70s, 80s rock.
Yeah, well, I like that too. But I like the techno music, pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like Genesis and that kind of stuff. So
yeah, Genesis,
at any rate,
yeah, yes, is yeah. Good. Anyway, at any rate,
yeah,
I will say this: what we have seen in the last two episodes is a completely different show than what we have been watching in that first, what, eight?
Yep.
It's not the same show.
Yeah. No, it isn't. It looks like if they had aired them in order, that it would have started out really well and jumped the shark later on.
And you can really tell when and how, looking back on this now, you can really tell that something was interfering with what the production and the cast were originally wanting to do with the show.
Mm-hmm.
Because characterizations are different. There's differences in the writing. We nitpicked a little on this one and on nine before that, but those were the nitpicks of, okay, this is a brand new series and these are the first couple episodes and they're just getting their feet under them. I mean, we did that with the first few episodes of Babylon 5.
Every series has its rough spots,
especially at the start.
When the characters appear, I mean, I remember all the way back to the early episodes of Next Generation, maybe even up to the first half of the season, nobody really seemed comfortable with what they were doing. And they were all very stiff and everything, and it just wasn't, you know, and it took them a while to grow into their characters. Any show is going to be that way.
Of course. I didn't like TNG, and it wasn't because of the character. I just didn't like TNG until right around the time Tasha Yar died. Spoiler for those who've never seen Star Trek The Next Generation. Sorry. Not sorry.
Yeah, how dare you spoil a 40-year-old show.
So, that was The Memory of War, the 10th episode, and we've only got 3 left now. Wow.
By the way, what did we get out of this? What did we get out of this episode? I got 3 things out of it. A technomage killed an entire planet for money. The apocalypse box is or may have been, at some point, its own character in the show.
Right.
And then the real thing that's going to carry on, in theory, is there's a temporary vaccine of some sort, this Teflon virus combo that the doc comes up with.
I would rephrase that last one to, it seems that the cure is going to be obtainable.
Yeah.
And probably sooner than we think.
So we're, you know, as originally intended, if this was one of the first few episodes we saw, there's some hope established.
There's a fourth thing we learned, JP.
What is that?
There is some sort of, in my opinion, major, but there is some sort of a conflict brewing between the apocalypse box and the technomage.
Yep.
Ah.
I would agree.
I wonder if the apocalypse box is Vorlon in origin.
I have to wonder, too, because the first question that Gideon asked him, the box says yes, and it was so kosh like it wasn't even funny.
And it's kind of got that Vorlon appearance, second, you know, also. And what are the questions? At the beginning in the opening crest, who are you? What do you want? Where are you going? But then the who do you trust and who do you serve? In other words,
who do you trust? Right.
Who do you trust and who do you serve? Yeah.
And the box says, do not trust.
Right. And remember, the technomages were shadow technology. I'm pretty sure we've mentioned that before, but that's definitely canonical in the technomage trilogy. And I rather strongly suspect that would, if it hadn't, it would have been brought out during the series itself for those who hadn't seen it, you know, who weren't aware of that yet. But the fact that the technomages were shadow technology makes me wonder if this apocalypse box was Vorlon technology, and wouldn't it just be like Straczynski to flip the quote good guy bad guy roles around in the next series?
Yes, it would, but we will never know.
We will never know.
So, at any rate, that was the Memory of War episode. And on our next very exciting episode is going to be titled The Needs of Earth. Okay. And the summary that goes along with that is Gideon and Darina feel a notorious prisoner processing stolen data crystals bearing important information of an alien culture. The captain discovers that treasure trove of data offers not medical science, but a special form of hope. So apparently this is going to be one of those touchy-feely kind of episodes coming up, which just leaves us kind of, it just leaves us with one question.
It does.
It does. Ask it. You ask it.
Well, was there any boom today?
There was actually some boom today.
And I sent you guys a picture of it. Yep. But what?
Yes. An explosion in the form of Sean Connery or Mark Twain.
There you go. And there will be boom tomorrow, and JP's going to tell us why.
Because there's always boom tomorrow.
There always? You go.
Okay. I'll take your word for it. Well, good night, everybody.
So long. So, JP, say good night, JP.
Good night, JP.
There we go.
Podcast terminated.
Thank you for listening to the Babylon Project podcast. You can email Raul and Jim at the Babylon Project podcast at gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at the Babylon Project podcast. On the internet, we are at babylonprojectpodcast.wordpress.com. To subscribe to the podcast, you can find us on iTunes, or you can subscribe to the RSS feed on the webpage.